There is a video that has been seen over 5 million times, 5.8 billion times to be precise. Let me give you the setup. I think it's two or three guys are fishing in the Everglades, and one guy catches a fish, and he's grabbed the fish, and he's putting it in the water well, and he leans over the side of the boat to rinse his hands off. And one of his pals says, I watched the video, one of his pals says, I wouldn't do that if I were you. You couldn't see what was under the water. And the guy goes, it's only a couple of seconds. He said, it won't do anything. He puts his hands in the water, and immediately as he puts his hands in the water, a shark grabs his right hand. And we have the picture there. There's the shark grabbing his right hand. And but it gets worse. The shark pulls him into the water. That's the next picture. There he goes over the side. You can see the blood on his hand like that. Now, fortunately, the shark let him go. And he grabbed with his bloody hand the boat, and his partners are able to pull him onto the boat. And they took the boat to a ranger station, and they airlifted him to a hospital and got some treatment for that. Wow. What we think of sometimes is no big deal. Like, I'll just wash my hands for a couple of seconds. It's not that big a deal. Sometimes it can be a very big deal. And this guy was warned, and he ignored the warning. And I think we see that in Scripture sometimes, of a warning of things that can happen to us, that we go, that's not that big a deal. And yes, it is really a big deal. We're continuing in our series in Genesis, and we're in chapter 39 this week. So if you have your Bibles, turn to chapter 39. I think we can learn from this chapter. We're going to see Joseph in action here. He's going to tackle temptation. I think we can learn some things from Joseph as we go through this. So let's begin reading Genesis 39, verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and he became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From that time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned. The Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was everything, was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. When with Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. So let's stop there. It's very clear that God is prospering Joseph here. That's mentioned several times in this passage. The author doesn't want us to miss this. This is God's blessing on his life. And God's presence is with Joseph. But you remember where he came from. He was sold by his own brothers into slavery. And yet God was with him. And God did not leave him when the going got tough. And I think that is something we need to grab onto as well. This presence of God put his difficulties in perspective. Yeah, it's a horrible thing to get sold into slavery. But God was still with him in his difficulties. God had a plan for Joseph, and God was working that plan out. He just didn't grasp the whole import of that yet. Verse 3, I think, is very interesting here. even Potiphar could see that it was God working in Joseph's life. Look at verse 3 again. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did. I mean, it must have been really obvious to Potiphar that God was with this young man, this young slave. And either he just observed that, or Joseph talked about it, and Potiphar said, why are you so good at everything? And Joseph said, the Lord my God is with me. I mean, he basically talked about God to Potiphar's wife. Why wouldn't he talk to God about Potiphar as well? Now, Joseph was 17 when he was sold into slavery. So he's going down there, and his time, and this unfolds over a period of 20 to 25 years, the story of Joseph, before his brothers come down to get food from Egypt. And so he's going through a learning process in these years. And so first he learns the ways of an Egyptian. He gets thrown into an Egyptian household. He's never been in Egypt. And he learns the ways of Egypt there. And then he does so well at just doing slave type stuff that the master says, come on in, you can stay in our house now. And then he becomes a personal attendant, taking care of certain things like a secretary would. And then he becomes his business manager. He's overseeing everything. So in a period of time, a number of years with Potiphar, Joseph grew in that because of the blessing of God. Let's start with the last part of verse 6 and verse 7. Now, Joseph was well-built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he is entrusted to my care. No one is greater in the house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you're his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. One day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by the cloak and said, come to bed with me. But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. Now, the passage says Joseph was well-built and handsome. The Bible doesn't talk about looks very much, but this is the second time in Genesis that something like this is mentioned. And let's go back to Genesis 29, verse 17. Leah had weak eyes, but Rachel had a lovely figure and was beautiful. Who was Rachel? Who did Rachel give birth to? Joseph. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree here. So Rachel, and that's mentioned, Rachel had this lovely figure and great face, and Joseph probably inherited some of that from her. So he's gone from slave, probably living outside of the house, to be in the house, and then the attendant, now business manager, and now Mrs. Potiphar. I wish they'd given her a first name. It'd be so much easier. I'm just calling her Mrs. the whole time. Mrs. Potiphar takes notice of him. She stops him in the hall one day and praises his rippling muscles and good-looking face. And she walks around him slowly and looks at all of his physical features. She touches his strong bicep, looks into his dark eyes, and says, come to bed with me. This is kind of awkward, right, for Joseph. But he was ready. I think this is fascinating. Joseph was ready with an answer when temptation like that struck. What did he say? With me in charge, he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master doesn't concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns is entrusted to my care. No one is greater in the house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you're his wife. How could then I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? I think this is a key point. Joseph had thought this through in his mind already. He was ready with an answer. When temptation struck, he didn't have to think of, well, what's my theology on this kind of thing? He knew exactly what that was. He had his ethical and theological reasons in his head already, so that when temptation struck, he was able to refuse that. Now, why did he refuse? If you're taking notes, these are the three letters A, B, and C there. Why did he refuse? It was an abuse of trust. And Potiphar trusted him with everything. And to sleep with another man's wife, that would be an abuse of the trust that he was given to him, entrusted to him by Potiphar. How could I do that? He said. He would abuse of trust. It was also an abuse of marriage. Joseph knew what marriage was. He knew there was a one flesh relationship between a man and a woman. And he knew what God thought about marriage. Joseph was a godly man, and he lived a godly life. And he said this would be an abuse of marriage, of the very design that God gave. And then number three, it was an abuse of God's will. And this is something God does not want. Why would I do something that God doesn't want? And this third point, notice Joseph doesn't say, how could I do such a wicked thing and sin against Potiphar? Now, that includes a sin against Potiphar, but it's definitely a sin against God. All of our sin is first and foremost a sin against God. It is a sin against who He is and His design for all of us. And then that obviously affects other people down the road. It goes against God's designated order. David, when he committed adultery, recognized this. And so in his confession to God in Psalm 51, he says this, "Against you and you only I have sinned and done what is evil in your sight, so that you are right in your verdict, justified when you are judged, when you judge." So Joseph thought it all through. He had it in his head. His answers were ready. He refused. That was it. He told Mrs. Potiphar, "I cannot join you in this sin." That's that. Or so he hoped. But this didn't put Mrs. Potiphar off. In fact, it might have even increased her desire when he said, "I can't do this." Because the text says she was after him day after day. And so the one refusal wasn't enough. She came back at him again and again. And it was first, "Come to bed with me." And then as he's going through the house doing his duties, she winks at him. And then she gives him this little gesture to show that she raises her eyebrows. "I'm thinking about you, man." And then when no one else is looking, she raises her gown a bit and shows him some knee. And then she gives him a come hither stare. And when she's in the hallway down to the bedroom, and she crooks her finger like this. And this went on day after day. Can you imagine refusing something like this? "Mrs. Potiphar after you like that." Joseph had a pretty strong constitution, or a very strong relationship with God, and a knowledge of what God wanted to be able to say, "No, I'm not doing that," day after day. But then one day, she gets even a bit violent with this. I mean, she literally grabs him by the arm and the cloak and starts dragging him down the hall toward her bedroom. And he freaks out and drops the cloak and runs, just runs out of the house. Disaster seemingly averted. But there's another kind of disaster waiting in the wings, isn't there? Verse 13. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has been brought in to make sport of us. He came here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." And she kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. When she told him this story, "That Hebrew slave you bought us came to me to make sport of me, but as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." When his master heard the story his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me," he burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. There's an old line, maybe you've heard it, "Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned." Have you heard that line before? Mrs. Potiphar was scorned, and her fury erupted there at that time. What does she do? She makes up a story about Joseph, and knowing that this story is going to cause him to leave the house. In other words, if I can't have him, nobody can. He's out of here. And she doesn't care if he gets killed or not. Doesn't care what happens to him. Just get him out of here. And it says that Potiphar burned with anger, and I think it's interesting that it does not say, I know it's a negative, argue from negative, but it doesn't say he was angry with Joseph. It just says he burned with anger. And I think this is an indication that he's really angry about the situation. Because at that time, a slave would have a death penalty for rape. And that's what would happen here. Slaves had no rights. Instead, he gets thrown into a minimum security prison where the political prisoners of the king are kept. And so that's what happens to Joseph. And that's he's not thrown into the dungeons where the really bad dudes are. This is a lighter sentence for Joseph. And remember, who's in charge of who's the captain of the guard? Potiphar is the captain of the guard. He's probably in charge of the whole prison system. And so he deliberately gives a lighter sentence to Joseph. It's likely that Potiphar was aware of his wife's tendencies, and that he can't be seen to go against his own wife, but he can't see killing the best business manager he's ever had either. And so he puts him in a place, he doesn't have him killed, but puts him in a place where it's a minimum security prison. Verse 20. But while Joseph was there in the prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success whatever he did. And that's Genesis chapter 39. So this chapter ends like it begins. God was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. And even though the circumstances of Joseph change in negative circumstances, God is still with him and gives him success whatever he does. The difficult circumstances did not mean that God left him. And I think sometimes that happens to you and me. When we feel our circumstances get hard or difficult, that God is left us. Or God, what is wrong? Where is God? What happened here? God doesn't leave when the going gets tough for you and for me. He's there even in the tough times. And I think we can learn from the tough times like Joseph did. An illustration. A number one seed, this is 2 years ago, if you're a basketball fan, the number one seed 2 years ago was Alabama in the men's basketball, men's college basketball. And so there was great expectation 2 years ago in the March Madness tournament that Alabama would do really well. They dropped out in the Sweet 16. They lost to a team they shouldn't have lost to. And it was rather disheartening for Alabama and the team. And so the coach, Nate Oates is his name. He went to one of the greatest coaches of all time. That's Nick Saban, who was the Alabama football coach at that time, and said, how do you recoup after a loss like that when you have this tough time and everybody is disappointed? What do you do? We have a picture there. There's on the left, Saban talking to Oates on the right. What did the football coach say? Saban emphasized the importance of this. Listen, not dwelling on the opportunity that was lost, but focusing on the opportunity to come. I think that's brilliant. Not dwelling on the opportunity that was lost, what happened, dwell on the opportunity that's ahead of you. And that approach paid off. This past year, 2024, the Alabama men's team actually made the Final Four for the first time in their history. And so they dwelt on what was ahead. And the coach Oates said this, it's a great philosophy in life. There's a lot of adversity you hit. You live in the past, you're not going to be very good at the present. And I think that's great advice. And that's exactly what Joseph did. This is the second time Joseph has been the victim of other people's spite. Yet he doesn't sink into bitterness. He does the best with what he's been given. And he's thinking about the present, what's going ahead here. And that's what he did in the prison. So let me ask you this question. Is there anyone here who is living in a circumstance that's less than desirable? Maybe it's a relationship that you have, or maybe it's some family issues that are going on, or maybe it's something at work, and you say, it's just that's not the way I wanted it to happen. Maybe it's a physical issue you have, or some illness. And you say, you know, where is God? What's going on with this? Look at Joseph. He does the best with what he's been given, even in this horribly negative circumstance that he happens to be, you know, unjustly accused and thrown into prison. The Apostle Peter would write about this in the New Testament. This is what he said. So then those who suffer according to God's will should commit themselves to their faithful Creator and continue to do good. Isn't that good? I mean, I think that's exactly what Joseph did. Commit himself to God and continue to do good, even though the circumstances were tough. Great advice, especially for any of you who are going through a time right now that you don't consider ideal. All right, that's chapter 39. And I thought it was interesting, last week we talked about Genesis 38, and we looked at Judah and what happened with Judah, and now we're looking at Joseph here in chapter 39. And I think Joseph has something on the ball that Judah did not have on the ball. Here we have last week, chapter 38 and chapter 39, we have two brothers from the same family at the exact same time. Remember Genesis 38, we talked about at that time. Joseph is taken down into Egypt. Genesis 38 begins with at that time. So what happens in 38 is the exact same time that's happening in 39. So we see two brothers. at the very same time, from the same family, immersed in a foreign culture. Judah is immersed in the culture of the Canaanites. Joseph is immersed in the culture of the Egyptians. Judah chases after promiscuity, goes to a prostitute. His family's falling apart. Joseph runs from promiscuity. Two guys in the same family. And God would bless the descendants of Judah, and we talked about that last week, where because of the grace of God, the descendants of Judah and Tamar and Perez would lead to King David and lead to the Messiah. An amazing gift from God, a grace gift from God. But that was going to be years down the road, centuries down the road. But what was needed with Joseph was something a bit more immediate, because God wanted to bless the nation of Israel and wanted to grow that tribe, that clan up, and bless them and strengthen and establish them and keep them from famine. So God was using the character of Joseph now more quickly than he was using the promise to Judah. And so I think we can learn from Joseph in these circumstances, particularly regards to temptation, because we all face temptation here. And that's the topic for the rest of the message today. Two of the biggest temptations you and I will ever face are the misuse of money and the misuse of sex, two of the great temptations in our society today. Those are huge in our culture, and they are all around, and I'm sure it's in your neighborhood, in your family, and your workplace as well. Maybe for you it's the abuse of drugs. Maybe drugs or alcohol or something that you struggle with, and that tempts you. And perhaps it's with you it's power and control over others. You have to be in charge, that kind of thing. And we're all different. We all have different personalities, different backgrounds. And so what pulls at us is a little different, but it's still temptation. What can we learn from this chapter? What did Joseph do when it came to temptation? If you're taking notes, point number one is this. Joe refused her. He refused Mrs. Potiphar. And like I mentioned before, he was ready with an argument. His ethics and theology were in place before the temptation hit. He was ready. And again, here's it is what he said. When temptation came at him, sleep with me, come to bed with me. But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns has been entrusted to my care. No one is greater in the house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you're his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? He knew it was an abuse of trust. It was abuse of marriage. It was abuse of God's will. He knew that. He had that in his mind. When temptation hit, he said, that's it. I'm not doing this. Very good. He knew that ahead of time. And I think it is not helpful to try to establish your ethics and your theology when temptation hits the strongest, right? Because your mind is swirling with all these, the pull at this, whatever it is that is after you. And to try to establish, to think clearly about these things at that time is tough. You want to think it through ahead of time and be ready when temptation hits. The author of Hebrews directs us to what God thinks about this and what Joseph thought about this. Marriage should be honored by all, and the marriage bed kept pure, for God will judge the adulterer and all the sexually immoral. So Joseph was ready with what he thought. He refused. That's it. He knew what he thought. Point number two is this. Joseph removed himself from the temptation. That's what should have happened to a young woman in South Africa. She's a 24-year-old young woman. She and her husband were staying at the Allo Ridge Hotel and Nature Reserve. That's about 25 miles from Johannesburg, and that nature reserve advertises that gives its guests the ideal opportunity to view game up close, and they listed the opportunity to see these animals at close range that included hippopotamus and Cape buffaloes and rhinos and giraffes. The young woman's name was Chantel Beyer. She was one of the guests at the reserve, and she got a little too close to danger. The game park owner, her name is Alex Richter. He told this group of visitors, you can get out of the vehicle, that's fine. You can go up by the animals, not a problem. You can take photos. And he even coaxed them to go closer to the rhino. And one of the relatives of Ms. Beyer told reporters there were quite a few young people in the vehicle. They probably felt they could trust the guy. He was the owner. He was the driver. And so he was the adult. And so everybody's snapping pictures, including Richter. And he advised Chantal to, and that's the picture that they took there. Step even get a little closer. He was pushing him back closer to the rhinoceros. And then the rhino attacked and put its horn through the chest from behind. She had a collapsed lung and several broken ribs from the rhinoceros. The nature reserve where the incident took place declined to comment for the story, as you might imagine they would. But that's somebody who got a little too close to danger and suffered for it. We can get too close to danger. We can think it's no big deal, like the guy with the sharks in the boat. It's not a big deal in just a few seconds. And rather than run from danger, and we see what Joseph did in keeping away from danger in verse 10. And although she spoke to Joseph day after day and all this constant temptation, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. And that's the point I want to make. He removed himself from her presence, and that was very important. He avoided her like the plague. If the missus was in the sleeping quarters, he was gone in the garden or down at the market. If she was in the kitchen, he would only be in the kitchen if there was another person present with them. He was determined to stay out of the way of temptation. And he did. He decided to stay out of the way. And this is a prescription, by the way, that the book of Proverbs talks about. You know, Proverbs was a dad writing to his son about avoiding temptations and that kind of thing. And this is what he said in Proverbs chapter 5. Did I have that for you, Penny? No, it's before the cake, I think. That's temptation as well, by the way, for those of us who gained weight at Thanksgiving. Did I not put it? I might not have put it in there. There it is? Okay. Yeah, and so here's what the dad told the son in Proverbs. Keep to a path far from her. Do knock under the door of her house. That's in chapter 5, verse 7, chapter 7. Do not let your heart turn to her ways or stray into her paths. And so this is exactly what the father taught his son in the book of Proverbs, and that's exactly what Joseph did. Stay out of the way. Get out of the way of that situation, that temptation. Don't do that. That's good advice. Now we can look at the cake. So, I don't know anybody. I know I've gained weight over the last week. Anybody else? Yeah, thank you for that hand, Doug. I appreciate that. I'm not alone. So, when you know you have to lose weight, you don't bake a cake and set it on the counter all week long, right? Right? You know that. And this happens to us at Costco often. As Debbie and I are walking up and down the aisles, and I go, oh, that looks good. Oh, let's get some of that. And she says, we don't need that. No, we don't need that. We got it at home. We're going to eat it. Unless it's something she wants, and then, of course, we put it in the cart. But if it's in the house, you're going to eat it, right? If it's near, you want to have that thing. And just don't buy it. Just don't have it around. So if pornography is your large temptation, put covenant eyes, it's a blocker on your phone and your tablet or your laptop. Put covenant eyes on that. If it's you're tempted by drugs, stay miles away from where you get drugs. If certain novels bring you the wrong kind of vicarious experience, well, get rid of those novels and find something that's good to read. If it's a person that tempts you at work or in the neighborhood, stay away from that person. Just aloof is better than adultery. And so follow Joseph's example and remove yourself from the temptation. So that Joseph refused. He knew what he thought. He removed himself. And then number three is Joe ran. He literally ran. And it's the moment of a critical attack. He booked it. He escaped out of there. And what Joseph did revealed his character even more than his decisions he's made previously. Let me illustrate that with something. I know we don't have a large cockroach problem in this part of the country. Anybody have cockroaches in there? You don't have to share that. You don't have to raise that. I know that in humid places, in where there's a lot of heat and humidity, there's a lot of cockroaches, right? I've heard that in the South and other places. I'm sure PNG's got a lot of large, huge cockroaches in their place right there. Now, the way you find out if you've got cockroaches in the South, and I've heard this, you don't turn on all the lights in the house and stroll into the kitchen going, I'm going to see if there's any cockroaches here, because they're all gone. They've scurried under the refrigerator. How do you find out if there's any cockroaches? That you go in at night, you sneak into the kitchen before it's saying anything, and then flip the light on and watch the cockroaches scurry. That's the way you find out. You surprise them, and you find out what the deal is there. If you want to find out what's hidden in your soul, be surprised. See what happens when the lights are turned on in your life, like they did with Joseph. Like when he thought he was fine, and she literally grabs him by the cloak and drags him down the hallway. Then you find out what you're really made of. What a person does when he or she is taken off guard is the best kind of evidence for the kind of person they are and what you've put into your soul already. So what pops out of a person when they're surprised? What popped out of Joseph when he was surprised? Yeah, he ran. He'd leave the cloak. I don't care what looks embarrassing. I'm getting out of here. I'm booking it. He forgot his respectability. He was already determined to avoid her, and even when he was caught in a surprise moment, he reacted the way he knew God wanted him to react. He ran. And I think that shows the kind of person he was. That shows who he was inside, his soul. And that's kind of what we should do when we're confronted with the choice to sin. We have that in our minds. We've already refused it, but when surprised, we scurry, we run. The Apostle Paul would agree with this when he's giving advice to his young mentee, Timothy. And he said to him, flee the evil desires of youth and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. Now, I love what Paul does with this passage because he just doesn't say flee. Flee. But he said, and then he gives him something to replace that with. So flee from sin, but hang out with those people who are going to go in the same direction you're going. And so he replaces it with something positive like that Paul did to Timothy. And that's good advice. Hang out with those who are going in God's direction. All right, here's the three things that Joseph did to avoid temptation. He refused. He had it in his mind already. He removed himself from the temptation. Then he ran when it came at him hard and fast. And this whole episode in chapter 39 is very interesting because it's a test of the character of Joseph. It's a test. Joe doesn't know it yet, but in a few years, he's going to be up for a huge promotion, right? You know the story of Genesis. In a few years, he will be second in command in the whole nation, only to Pharaoh. And in a few years, he will have more than one woman throwing themselves at him. And he will have more money passed through his hands than anyone can imagine. And if he shows himself to be faithful in what he's doing now in Egypt, with one household, he can be trusted by God with many households in Egypt. And I think that's the same for you and for I. Jesus talked about this principle. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. Whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. Joe was proving faithful in this one home, and God could prove, let him entrust him with the whole nation. And it's the same for us. When you and I are faced with that temptation of that drug, that negative influence, that other person, too much money or taking money when we shouldn't, you and I just don't know the calling God has for us around the corner. And if we are faithful in what we do with little things, God can entrust us with bigger things. And I think that's very important for us to show ourselves faithful to God and look forward to what He has for us in the future. Just like Joseph did. Somebody once said that character, and we talked about character in Ace this morning. Somebody once said character is what you do when no one's watching. And I think, isn't that true? A true test of a man's character is what he does when no one is watching. Isn't that true? No one can see you. Only God can see you. And what do you do with that temptation? What do you do with that opportunity? Joseph is showing in this chapter that his character is good even when pressed, even when given difficult circumstances, even when alone with his boss's wife who desperately wants him. What does he do? He runs. Where did Joseph get his good character? From God, from his relationship with God. Joe acted like he knew God. He talked about God to those he was around. And when the going got tough, he showed he trusted God and wanted to obey God. And so when you and I make our relationship with God the anchor of our souls, when that is what motivates us, that is what inflames us, that is what gives us passion and life, when the relationship with God is at our very centers, when we go deep with Him, we will find the strength to tackle temptation when it comes, and it will come. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for just a very honest appraisal of temptation that your saints faced in the Scriptures. Thank you that we can learn from that. Help us to learn from that, Lord, and emulate a guy like Joseph who knew you well. And help us to tackle temptation in the same way. Thank you. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.